This is News in Notes. I'm Tony Cox. According to the American Medical Association, addiction is the most untreated, treatable disease in America. It doesn't discriminate, affecting people without regard to race, sex, or economic status. And many addicts manage to function every day without others knowing who they are. But how do they do it? Today, we continue our series on addiction with a look at functioning addicts. We're joined by Ed Storty, the author of several books and a certified alcohol and drug counselor and intervention specialist. Ed, welcome to News and Notes.
Thank you, Tony.
Let's begin with this. Give us an example of what a functioning addict is.
I think the functioning addict is one that's out there. They're on the freeway. They're going to work. They're trying to do the right thing. But ultimately, they're living in fear. They're living in emotional turmoil. Many find a way to sedate their feelings, sometimes at night or early in the morning. But overall, they're still pulling it off, meaning folks haven't caught on, or it takes, for some folks, years and years. My youngest patient has been 12 years of age. My oldest patient has been 94 years of age. And I was just working with a group of people that the family said, we need to intervene on this 82-year-old female. And I said, well, when did you start noticing problems and issues with her? And they said, well, when she was about 41 years of age, we figured there was a problem.
A long time ago. Listen, if functioning addicts are operating below the radar, I assume that they generally don't want people to know about their addiction. How much of a problem is it for them to maintain their anonymity?
It's frightening. I think that, when you hide it, you live in quiet desperation. And there's always the person that's hiding their alcohol or around the corner drinking what they do. Others with their medications or their pills. They don't want other folks to find out. I mean, it's a quiet illness until finally people do notice. But there's fear around it. I mean, fear of being caught or fear of being tested. Or ultimately, when the body gives out, secondary complications where physicians will say, what are you using? What are you doing for your organs to be given out like this? So there's ultimately not only denial that's going on, but obviously a lot of pain that goes with it.
What happens when a functioning addict is discovered by others? What happens to them?
Well, that's a good point. I think that one, first of all, defenses come up, and ultimately it's not me. It's because of this issue, that issue, and other people. A lot of folks will blame it on stress and pain of life, or legitimate pain, if you will. But as one goes on, either an epiphany will occur where they'll see it for whatever reason and go get help. And either through treatment or 12-step groups and things of that nature, or they continue on and lose everything. Tony, it's a devastating illness. I mean, it is lethal. I mean, when you think that there's over 23 million people that need help, I mean, that are addicted, and a microcosm of that is treated, so many families will talk about their loved ones or their father, their mother, their sister, their brother that had addiction that didn't make it.
You know, families dealing with addiction and friends dealing with addiction and coworkers dealing with others' addictions are problems that maybe we can help them some here. Mm-hmm. How are there don'ts, certain things that you just should not do when it comes to confronting a person with an addiction?
Well, if you do confront, you can do it with love, with respect, with kindness, with honesty. And many times as an intervention specialist, I'm told, well, do we have to intervene today? Do we have to do that? Well, the answer is, have you already talked to your loved one? And some people will say, no, we just hide around it, or we don't want the individual to get upset with us. Why not be honest? Go up to the individual, present, these are the deepest concerns, would you consider getting help? There are people that, based off of their behavior and issues going on, they will go get the help, or they continue on. That's where an intervention process might occur.
Are there addicts, functioning addicts, who are beyond help, beyond treatment?
No. I mean, I've worked with over 30 years of working with people thinking there's miracles in all human beings. There's wonderful miracles. And people will say, I think it's too late for her, too late for him. And I'm always in awe of the person that turns it around.
You know, we're all different and we all have varying levels of tolerance. Let's put it that way. So how can we determine if a loved one or a person that we are in contact with is in fact a functioning addict? How do we determine that?
Well, typically a family member, they're usually always not exaggerating. They're usually under-exaggerating. So usually that family member will know. Their gut will tell them. And when you think of it, the individual addicted often will say, well, it's not that bad. I don't think I'm hurting you. I don't think I'm hurting her or whatever. But normally a tolerance level starts to build. Usually they digress in tolerance, take lesser amounts. But overall, family will notice Jekyll and Hyde behavior, loss of spirit, loss of enjoyment of life, and your gut will tell you there is a problem. Typically, the addictive person will defend it to their death.
Are there some addictions that are less harmful than others? Let's say crack cocaine as an addiction versus gambling or versus shopping or something like that.
Yeah, a good point. I think that so many are full addictions. I mean, when you really think of it, our number one drug, I mean, that kills so many people today is alcohol. Often we'll fixate on cocaine, on meth, on prescription meds, but the drug that's used so prevalent is alcohol, and the secondary complications are horrible with that. When you think of the other drugs, the street drugs, they escalate and they'll accelerate you to a point that you've got to address it, or ultimately OD is around the corner, overdosing.
When you offer treatment, what precisely is it that you provide?
Well, I think the treatment models are different in different organizations, from outpatient treatment to residential treatment to 90-day treatment. You know, I'm often asked, or it's stated to me, that the treatment didn't work for him or her and there was a relapse. And my belief is treatment centers do work. It's will you work it? There are people that fight it and fight it to the point of gaining humility, and then they'll start to do what they're asked to do. But that happens in other pathology. That happens in other diseases too. People will fight it until finally they have to do it.
The time that you are spending with us is very valuable, and we want to make sure that we don't forget to give our audience any kind of information that would be helpful to them. What would you say to a family that is going through this right now that may be listening to us? What is the first thing they should do to help?
Well, first of all, I think there's hope. Always there's hope. And I believe that they should call such as the National Council on Alcoholism or a treatment program within their vicinity to ask questions, to find out how a family can be treated, how a family can diffuse the situation. They might look into a possible intervention assessment, or take a look at what is the treatment model based off of their insurance plan, to get some type of an awareness or understanding what is available for the time and moment that that loved one will say, I'll go get help, or might they then be proactive versus reactive and get help for themselves?
Ed Stordy, thank you so much for coming in. Ed Stordy is a certified alcohol and drug counselor and intervention specialist. He is the author of several books, including Heart to Heart, The Honorable Approach to Motivational Intervention, and Addiction Recovery Tools. He was with me here at our NPR West studios.